inches deep by 28 inches wide. If you have one, please contact Ani Haynes at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or by email at volunteer@kboo.org to make arrangements. Thanks for helping us keep our food cold while we work hard at producing the best community news, public affairs, and music for the Portland metro area, Cascadia, and the world here at KBOO Portland.
Now I hear people say I'm strong, but I didn't always.
Friday, April 10, 6 p.m. Join us on Bread and Roses for a roundtable of autistic women advocates. They will be talking about Autism Acceptance Month in April, why awareness without acceptance is not enough, and how they work to advance disability rights, centered on the access, needs, and opportunities for autistic people like themselves, despite harmful stereotypes and problematic media representations. Expect some strong opinions about vaccines, Abed from Community, and BBC's Sherlock. Join us Friday, April 10, 6 p.m.
For listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sari Gamepa. Cece Bell is an author and illustrator of children's books, including the Sock Monkey series. Her latest venture is a memoir of her childhood, El Defo, told in the form of a graphic novel. This is the story of how she lost her hearing at the age of 4.5 and was subsequently equipped with a phonic ear hearing aid. This clunky device did make her stand out in a crowd and made her acutely aware of her differences. But even as a child, she managed to turn this difference into a superpower. It's a delightful tale in which she copes with challenges by asking herself, what would Batman do? Cece is deaf and doesn't communicate using sign language. She depends on lip reading and using her own voice. So, Cece joined me from her home in Virginia via Skype and a few recording devices. We started our conversation with understanding her phonic ear hearing aid and childhood superpowers. The book is called El Defo, and it's just this delightful memoir of that's also a graphic novel. So first tell our listeners, before we talk about the book, first tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay. I have been writing and illustrating books for children for about 15 years, and until the graphic novel, I've mostly done picture books and early readers, and so this was a new format for me. And I live in Virginia, and I'm married to another writer, and his name is Tom Engelberger. And he's known for the Origami Yoda series. And so we both work at home, and we have a really great time most of the time working on books and just having a great time doing that.
Well, the story of El Defo begins with the phonic ear, and it has the ear molds of virtue and the cords of intuition and the on-off switch of awesomeness.
You better believe it.
So tell us about the phonic ear contraption that resulted in your childhood superpowers.
Sure, absolutely. What I forgot to say when I was talking about myself, because sometimes I do forget, is that I lost my hearing when I was about 4.5 in 1975. And so I'm 44 now, I'll be 45 in December, and so I've had many different kinds of hearing aid technologies or used them since 1975. So the book focuses mostly on our little friend here, the phonic ear, which was a very large hearing aid. It doesn't look all that big, but I was a very small kid. So I wore this, and it was an amazing contraption that somehow worked really well. I don't even understand it because I never took the time to really learn, but some kind of FM system, you know, radio wave. And it worked together with the teacher's microphone, which is ugly, flesh-colored, but very powerful. And so I wore my part, the teacher wore her part, or his part, and it just magnified her voice really loud, just for me. And I could hear her anywhere she was, and that included in the entire school, not just in the classroom, but wherever she was in the entire school. And the great thing was that she could not hear me. So I had a lot of power over her. And as far as the on-off switch of awesomeness, I could turn my part on and off, and I can still turn my hearing aids on and off. And that's awesome because sometimes the world gives you too much sound and too much input. And I'm sure that there are hearing people who would love to be able to just click and turn the world off, even for just 5 minutes. Anyway, the teacher's part had an on-off switch too, but I never ever told my teacher that there was an on-off switch, hoping that she wouldn't notice. And every now and then there would be a teacher who didn't notice or just forgot to turn it off. Some were really good about remembering and some weren't. So, but anyway, it was amazing, and I think it actually gave me a huge advantage over my classmates because I could always hear my teacher, no matter what. Her voice was always in my ear. And all the other students, you know, they didn't always hear everything, but I did. And I think that I actually made better grades simply because of that. So it's kind of a weird thing to be the kid with this problem, but it actually ended up being a real advantage.
That's true.
Well, I, at the beginning of the story, I mean, after you talk about becoming deaf and having the phonic ear, the first story you tell is about hearing your teacher in gabbing with other teachers in the teacher's lounge or smoking a cigarette or in the bathroom. So talk about how that became your superpower.
Yeah, and what was fun about that superpower too was trying to be a sound detective, because when people go to the bathroom, they don't say, "Hey, I think I'll go to the bathroom now. There's a door with a sign on it that says ladies." You know, they don't, they just go. And so I had to take all this input I was getting. Maybe I could hear a sound of a zipper or the toilet flushing or the sigh of relief. And that, you know, that's what really helped me know where she was. So I don't know if your teacher smoked like mine did, but, you know, being able to hear that big exhale and all the gossip surrounding the teacher in the teacher's lounge, that was pretty neat. It was a lot of fun.
I bet. That was one of my favorite stories. Do you have a favorite story from your book that you want to tell?
Oh, sure. I think my favorite part to tell and to draw was the crush I had on the very cute neighborhood boy, Mike Miller. That stuff was so much fun to draw. I love drawing hearts, and this was, you know, I had hearts just busting out of my head. So I think that was probably my favorite part, and my favorite story in the book is probably the curly pencil incident when the boy, a different boy, broke the curly pencil that my father gave me, and then Mike Miller, sort of, the boy that I loved, he sort of, he forced that kid to apologize to me and made me feel really nice and special. So that was probably my favorite story to tell in the book.
What was it like, not writing, but developing your own memoir and drawing yourself as a rabbit, as a child, and drawing your friends and this little boy crush you had? What was that experience like?
It was a lot of fun, and it was also kind of daunting. I still have mixed feelings about portraying some of those friendships that were maybe not as successful as the one that I had with my best friend, because those are real people. And if they read the book, hopefully they didn't, but if they did, the ones that I was maybe not fair to, I hope that they forgive me. I was really just trying to depict what everybody's friendships are like in a lot of ways. And I know that I wasn't fair. And part of the reason I wasn't fair to them was because I was trying really hard to remember what it felt like to be a kid. And when you're a kid, you don't always realize that your friends have their own problems going on. Maybe their parents are splitting up, or maybe a parent has, an addiction to something, and you don't see that part of them. And then when you grow up and you find out what the whole story was, you think, oh, gracious. Oh, that's terrible. I wish I had been a better friend. But that wasn't the story I was telling. I was telling what it felt like for me. I wanted readers to be me when they read the book. So that part was hard. And I still wrestle with that.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sarika Mehta, chatting with author Cece Bell about her graphic novel memoir, El Defo. Cece was just describing the challenges behind some of the stories she tells in her book. Then she also describes the intent behind illustrating all characters with rabbit ears.
But on the whole, putting rabbit ears on everybody is loads of fun, especially there were some TV scenes. I think you might remember where there's Spock with rabbit ears and Barney Fife and Andy Griffith with rabbit ears. I mean, that was fun. That was fun.
Actually, I was curious, why rabbit ears?
Oh, the rabbit ears are definitely there for a reason. And the main reason, or there's two things. Rabbits have really big ears and really great hearing. And I wanted to be that character who had the big ears, but the ears didn't work. They were broken. And so the ears were just for show, just like my actual ears. And then the other reason is, in real life, the cords of my hearing aids just went up to my ears to hear. But having rabbit ears meant that I could make the cords go all the way up over my head. And that was more what it felt like. I felt conspicuous, even though probably my classmates didn't even notice it anymore. But I felt like I was always conspicuous. So having the cords go over my head was a little bit more of a, let's get fancy, a visual metaphor. Just a good way to show the feeling. So that's why. So I think some people were a little put off by the rabbits, but there really was a reason, you know. And they're cute, you know. So you might get more readers with rabbits.
They were cute, and that's a really good point, that it just it drew more attention to the ears and how you felt having the hearing aids plugged in and feeling like you're on show all the time. And what you were saying about kind of the more difficult friendships you had, that related to another question. A lot of people don't even know that the deaf community here in the US and around the world have their own culture and their own language. And your mom even tried to get you to sign up for sign language classes at the local church, which was a less than positive experience for you as a kid.
Right.
Why don't you talk about that story a little bit?
About the sign language. Okay. That was also an extremely difficult chapter to write, probably the hardest by far. And I wanted to be very careful that somehow I put in that chapter how important sign language is. And I wanted to somehow show that as an adult, I totally respect that language, because as a kid, I was nothing but disrespectful. I mean, just awful. I'm ashamed to even say those things. But so I was able to use the teacher as this person who could talk about what sign language is and what it means and how important it is, so those points get across. But I had to be honest again and just say, you know, I didn't want to learn sign language because none of my friends used it. I was being raised totally in a hearing world, a hearing community, and I felt like if I learned sign language, then everyone would be watching me and staring at me if they saw me use it, which is funny because I talk with my hands a lot, and I love people who talk with their hands. So, but I'm trying to learn it a little bit because I do talk to deaf children and who use sign language more than anything else. So I'm trying, but it is the most fascinating language. That's just completely different from anything else out there. It's amazing. But the other thing about sign language that I wonder about is, for example, I don't like to dance in public. I'm very, what's the word? I'm not an exhibitionist at all. The sign language is almost like dance to me, and I get very self-conscious when I'm trying to actually use these signs. And I've often wondered if there are other people who have trouble hearing who also sort of stay away from sign language because they're so self-conscious. It is an interesting thing because you have to be almost like an actor. You know, your face has to do a lot of things and your hands, of course, have to do so many things. But I hope that that chapter in the afterword that I wrote sort of just made it clear that I am not anti-sign language at all. I do think it's amazing. It was just a time in my life where I was simply not receptive to it.
Thanks for tuning in to KABU Community Radio in Portland. If you missed any of this program, you can listen to the archive at kboo.fm/betweenthecovers. I'm Sarika Mehta, chatting with author Cece Bell. We're talking about her memoir, El Defo, depicted as a graphic novel. We had just been talking about why Cece, as a child, didn't want to learn sign language, and how difficult it was for her to write that story in her book. We then shifted to the audience response to her book.
Overall, the response has been huge. It has been, I would have to say, unreal. I did not think that this book was going to go anywhere at all because all of my previous books have done, you know, moderately well. But I've been under the radar for a long time. You're like, oh, this is going to be under the radar too. So that's been a real shock to be, you know, really noticed. And I've gotten wonderful responses from teachers, both hearing and teachers for the deaf, librarians, and the kids themselves, which is the most important thing. The kids are eating it up. I'm getting so many emails from kids, both hearing and deaf or using hearing aids, who are just really excited about it. They've read it many, many times. But what's been really wonderful for me is hearing from adults who are pretty much exactly like me. The same kind of hearing loss, used the same technology, had the same experience, and they're writing me saying, you wrote my story. And it's been so wonderful to hear that. And also, a lot of deaf adults are using the book as sort of a manual to share with hearing people. You know, read this. This might help you understand me better. So that's been, there have been many things like that that I didn't anticipate because I was writing this book for purely selfish reasons. You know, I was just ready to get this off my chest.
Why did you decide to write this memoir at this point?
Okay. I had read Raina Kalgemeier's Smile, and that's another graphic novel memoir. And it was just amazing how she was able to show this thing in her childhood so perfectly. And that kind of got me thinking about it. And also, I was just oddly ready. I think that I had been going through a lot of frustrations with hearing people, kind of, you know, being in these situations where I couldn't explain to them what I needed from them. And once again, I'm very non-confrontational, not an exhibitionist, all that stuff. And so I was finding it hard to vocally say, I need you to do things differently. So the book really started out more as a manual, you know, here's what I need from you. You know, here's how you should speak to a lip reader. Here's how not to speak to a lip reader. And it started that way, but then it became a lot more than that. And I was just ready. I was just basically no longer ashamed and ready to ask the world for help when I needed it. So I just went ahead and put it out there.
Wonderful, wonderful. My last question is a little bit, it's not about your book, it's just about disability. I talk to a lot of disability rights advocates, and they are very frustrated with how disability is portrayed in media and pop culture. So for example, Eddie Redmayne, who is an able-bodied actor, he won the Oscar for Best Actor for portraying Stephen Hawking in the film The Theory of Everything. And that's just one example. This is like a formula. When an able-bodied actor portrays somebody with a severe disability or, you know, something along those lines, they tend to win Oscar, like the highest achievement. And so I was wondering if you had any thoughts or comments about these kind of issues.
Okay. I have actually been talking or thinking about this issue for years, ever since I started watching TV and the movies. I think there's a really fine line in all of this. And I'll say that comedy, well, back up a little bit. The depictions of people with a disability, that's really, I think, a tricky, tricky thing. I think there are some actors who overdo it. And when they overdo it, it just makes me want to throw up. And it's just, no. When they underplay it or don't, you know, just don't overdo it, it's so much better. Sometimes it's just the movie itself. If the movie decides to focus on the disability with all this violin music and maudlin stuff, that's just wrong. When the movie focuses more, I'll talk about the ones I like. My Left Foot with Daniel Day-Lewis is excellent. He's angry. He's funny. He's a real person. And you never lose sight of that. Where some depictions of people with disability, it's all about the disability and somehow manages to be about all the people around that person instead of that person. You know, isn't that wonderful the way Buddy helped his little deaf friend? You know, I just, that stuff really, And then in comedy, there's a really fine line. It's almost never funny to single out somebody with a disability and make fun of that. That doesn't work very well. And my favorite depiction of a person with a disability in any movie was, this is kind of strange, but it was in Four Weddings and a Funeral. And Hugh Grant's character has a brother, and the brother is deaf. And they communicate, everybody communicates with him using sign language. And he's not the main character, which is one of the things I love about it. He's not the main character, but he's part of their group, and he's part of their lives. And when they communicate with them, it's all completely natural and wonderful. And so that's what I want to see more of in movies, where there's just these side characters who maybe aren't the main character, are connected to the main character, but that's what real life is. We all have relatives and friends that are different from us in one way or another. It's just really cool to see, you know, you're the main character in your life, but it's really cool to see that in a movie. And I don't know that I've seen that very often. But that's my favorite, because there were no violins, because there didn't need to be. It wasn't about him. It was about Hugh Grant. But he added so much to Hugh Grant's story that I just thought that was really, really cool. You know, it's not even my favorite movie in the world, but that was awesome. And I got very excited when I saw that.
No, I really appreciate your perspective. And I remember in that movie that they do communicate with him in sign language without making a big deal or a drama about it. Do you have any last remarks or things you want to talk about that we didn't talk about?
I don't think so. I'm just really, really pleased at how the book has resonated with people. And it's just been a real bonus to a really neat thing for my life. And I guess I do have one thing to add, is that in talking to adults and kids who are like me, I've gotten a lot of new information about new technology that's very exciting, that I don't think I would have gotten on my own. And so just from email communications and meeting people at book events, so that's actually opened me up to being brave and possibly looking for new technology for myself. My current hearing aids are 11 years old, and I'm 44 years old, and I've been having a lot of trouble lately, more and more with understanding. And so I'm kind of excited to be pursuing some new things that I probably wouldn't have done without the help of other people. So that's been another really neat thing to come out of the book for me personally.
Well, that's really cool. That's great. Well, Cece Bell, thank you so much for taking the time and technology to chat with me.
Thank you. Thank you very much for setting all of this up. I appreciate it.
That was Cece Bell, author of El Defo, her graphic novel memoir. We met up on Skype from my home in Oregon to her home in Virginia. You can learn more about her at her website, ccbell.wordpress.com. I'm Sarika Mehta. Thanks for listening.
KBOO and the Quinta Street Theater are proud to present a music documentary that raises the bar for the genre. Arrows into Infinity, the new documentary about the life of jazz musician Charles Lloyd, Thursday, April 9 at the Clinton Street Theater. Arrows into Infinity takes us on Lloyd's journey from the heights of jazz rock royalty to his life in seclusion and back again. Arrows into Infinity, the Portland premiere, Thursday, April 9, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And welcome to Words and Pictures. I'm your host, S.W. Conser, and we are live in the studio today with two guests who will be participating next week in the second annual Linework Northwest Comics and Illustration Festival. Sam Marks is the co-organizer of Linework. He's been responsible also for the Small Press Expo event on the opposite coast outside of D.C. Welcome, Sam.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
And also, we're joined